welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey on this, the day after Groundhog Day. Sam is off today, but I am Becky Friedman, and I am in the studio with you and with Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Becky.
And with Luke.
Doing great here. Hi.
I'm not doing so great, thanks for asking, but I am not one of the 47 confirmed measles cases that we were up to in Clark County.
We didn't want to put you on the spot.
No, you did not. No, nor am I on the spot because you know what? I have been vaccinated appropriately against measles, mumps, and rubella, which of course our county health departments and our state now urges everyone to do. Please, please do not give in to fear-mongering and misinformation that is deliberate and way debunked. Please protect your family and vaccinate yourselves and your kids.
Next month
is what?
I'm going to be taking care of that at home next month.
Is that when your kiddo is
due.
Okay, nice. Excellent. So I am feeling a little bit under the weather. It might have to do with the weather itself. Did you guys see what happened with a groundhog somewhere out in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
So actually, we've got some comments on this. Chloe from Seattle actually writes, and I think it's delightful that we have a mainstream holiday devoted to forest creature prophecies.
I think it is also delightful. In fact, I wish we had more.
It would be nice if we had some forest creature prophecies, because then what, it might bring attention to the plights of forest creatures?
Absolutely.
Or motivate people to preserve the habitats of forest creatures? Is that your line on this?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the biodiversity is a great indicator of the health of an ecosystem and future repercussions from human actions. Working in and teaching salmon conservation is kind of a lot like Groundhog's Day, except that they always see their shadow.
Which means they always see the future as grim. Or
pretty much. With some really important and celebrated victories, you know, it can keep you going. But and using animal health to determine ecosystem health is, you know, it's not really a bad idea.
So there is actually predictive favor in that. Like there's you can make long-term analyses and forecasts and projections based on health in certain animal populations, right? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm getting at.
Now, I think in some of the pre-show research, Dan, you did find out that Punxsutawney Phil, or any of the many, many marmotous creatures that have filled the role of Punxsutawney Phil, have actually found to not be statistically accurate in, what, 60% of the cases?
That's right. Punxsutawney Phil is correct about 40% of the time in the last 10 years.
Wait,
ooh,
what?
Darn.
A magic rodent isn't particularly accurate at predicting the weather?
That's right, yeah.
What?
Well, you know what we need here? We need a feline. I mean, they are way more predictive. They're way more accurate. You know, if a cat stares at me, I know that I'm going to be in trouble and cleaning up something from the litter box, you know, real soon. But this brings us to the neighboring state, not in Pennsylvania, but in Ohio, because a ginger cat who has been adopted by Cleveland's St. Casimir Polish Church since being abandoned on its doorsteps years ago as a kitten has forecasted only a possible relief from harsh winter conditions, in contrast to a groundhog in a neighboring state of Pennsylvania. Just some groundhog, you know. Church administrators have publicized a tradition wherein Casimir, the Polish prince of felines, eats a specially prepared pierogi on February 2nd. Church spokesman and master of ceremonies John Nidzelek reported that the cat was seen eating his game day pierogi very slowly and patiently. And that can only mean one thing, that Ohioans will go through some cold and snowy periods yet, but will experience some real nice days soon.
So this cat has some pretty good taste in food, from what I gather.
Well, I mean, at least he doesn't scarf down the pierogi. He savors it. He eats it patiently.
I don't think I could handle that myself.
I read the report from last year. Apparently, last year they predicted a longer winter because the cat got sour cream on his whiskers. And white whiskers, of course, is indicative of frost. So.
Oh, I like this. What other things could indicate? So if it's patiently eating a pierogi, it means that we got to be patient, that we'll have some nice days. What other kinds of things could your pierogi eating habits predict here?
If he just scarfs it down immediately, it means incoming meteor. Just, you know, enjoy your last few seconds. That's
I'll keep that in mind.
So I kind of like this because it's a church. they're doing funny things, but they're kind of understanding that this has no predictive power. And I kind of wonder whether anyone within the Polish church has actually looked at it and said, clearly this is a joke that we're making with the predictive power of our kitten, and applied it and reflected it back on themselves. Whatever kind of ritual they make, whatever kind of incense flavor they put in the scepters, whatever kind of robes you wear, doesn't really have a predictive value on what's going to happen. Just as a cat eating a pierogi doesn't really have a predictive value of the weather, just as a rodent seeing its shadow doesn't really have a predictive value in determining the weather. I mean, do you guys wonder this, or do you think that it's just a fun way to capitalize on people's loves of internet cats?
Go ahead.
Didn't even think of the internet cat thing, but I'm sure that has something to do with it.
I think everybody likes to have a little fun. I mean, you don't necessarily have to get all metacognitive about your religion just because mm-hmm. you're having a little fun with cats. Maybe people should, but maybe life needs some joy too.
I love this kitty. Did you guys see the picture of this cat? Mm-hmm.
Didn't they say it was more accurate than the groundhog?
I don't know of the statistical significance of his increased accuracy. I mean, maybe we need a longer period of time.
Right.
I mean, eventually, maybe the cat will like grow to be 12, 13 years old and, you know, not really able to eat pierogi so well, although it's kind of a little pate in there, isn't it?
We could do some controlled studies with pierogi versus lumpia versus no treat whatsoever.
Yeah, okay. Other kinds of cultural dumplings. I think that other churches need, I mean, we're close to Chinese New Year right now. We're close to, you know, maybe we can have some actual, you know, dumplings from soup and
Like some bao, some wonton, some pot stickers.
Yeah.
And now I'm hungry.
Yeah, let's make this an international celebration to see
animals eating our cultural dumplings.
Exactly. I think I'm down with this.
What would be the atheist like churches, the atheist equivalent of the animal eating the particular food?
A robot eats nothing.
I don't think you can make any predictions based on that.
What is the prediction?
The robot is once again eating nothing. What does this mean?
How quickly does my cell phone battery die if I'm only playing 2048?
I think that the robot continues to eat nothing. It continues to mean there is no God. I think that's the atheist groundhog day. So, you know, one thing that I wouldn't like to do would be to teach that kind of thing in a school, right? Because obviously, you know, public schools should be free from... It should be free. I mean, I as a school teacher can't get around that, but it should be free from the religious, teachings of particular faiths. Everyone from every single faith or no faith should be able to come to public school and learn free from, you know, being indoctrinated into any kind of thing. Like, you know, we think that it's silly to say that a forest creature can predict the weather. I'll tell you, last year teaching my English language learner immigrant students about Groundhog Day, they were completely confused. And we like to compare to, what kind of holiday do you have in your country that's kind of like this? And they're like, none, this is weird and stupid. So they're like, first you believe that there's a Santa Claus that brings you presents through the chimney. Now you believe that a squirrel is going to be predicting snow or not snow. But anyway, I'm really glad that the public schools can be free of this kind of... indoctrination, right? I mean, you'd think, right? Right, guys? You with me on this?
I think I'm more of the mini golf stance on it. You know, let's invite everybody and have a great big slew of crazy ideas, but not during actual curriculum time.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's stuff that's really important you should learn.
You should be following some good curriculum for science and math.
Mm-hmm.
Social studies, you can include a little more, I suppose.
Well, yeah, there are actually three states right now that are floating bills that would prevent teachers from indoctrinating students. And that, on first blush, sounds pretty good. State legislators in Arizona, South Dakota, and Virginia are floating bills this session to bar teachers from teaching so-called controversial issues or advocating for any issue that is part of a political party platform at the national, state, or local levels.
Hang on.
South Dakota's House Concurrent Resolution 1002, Virginia's House Joint Resolution 684, and Arizona's HB 2002 are all sponsored by Republican lawmakers. Arizona's bill is based on model legislation from a campaign sponsored by the far-right anti-Muslim David Horowitz Freedom Center.
Oh, there it is.
Yep. They want freedom.
So initially, this kind of sounds like it would be pretty cool because, you know, it would in our state, for instance, if this were to fly, it would prevent people from using the classroom to spout such gems on the Republican Party platform that include, we believe that upholding our rule of law and justice is based upon our constitutional and Judeo-Christian heritage.
Yeah, I don't want that taught in schools.
Neither do I.
So how about the family unit is the cornerstone of a free and moral society?
What kind of family unit?
And what kind of morals?
So how about it's the primary duty of parents, not the state, to protect, nurture, and prepare their children for adulthood?
Can we do this together?
Measles outbreak?
How about we strongly oppose the redefinition of marriage and family and the blurring of gender distinctions, which threaten the personal safety and privacy of the opposite gendered children and adults in public toileting or bathing facilities?
I think they're more of a danger in bathrooms than transgendered people.
Yeah, statistically speaking, yes. I believe there have been more conservative lawmakers attacking or molesting people in bathrooms.
How about, getting rid of... oppositions to mandatory religious instruction. I mean, that sounds pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
How about opposition to sex education? Homosexual, bisexual, and transsexual education.
Like we shouldn't learn about them or we shouldn't educate them?
I don't know.
I don't think they want to talk about them.
But I'm just hearing Rocky Horror music in my head at this point. I don't know what they think transsexual education means and who wants to promote that. I think teachers just want to acknowledge that there are trans individuals in the world that exist. But if Republicans got their way, then something like this wouldn't even be able to be spoken about.
I don't think that's their intent, though.
So here's the thing. When you look at the Washington State Democratic Party platform from 2018, you have things that wouldn't be allowed to be taught in a public classroom that include uniting to prevent the destruction of the environment, our communities, and our planet.
Wait, which one of those things are they against?
Well, it's mentioned in a party platform, Dan, so according to these bills.
Oh, the Democrats are for this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but if these party, anti-indoctrination bills get passed in these states, right now it's really only being floated in Arizona, Virginia, and what was the other one? Arizona, Virginia, and South Dakota. Because it appears in a party platform, you wouldn't be allowed to teach it in public schools. So things that exist on the party platform of any party would be barred from being taught in public schools, regardless of whether it's a fact that's self-evident or, included in constitutional documents. So when the Democratic Party platform says that we should unite to prevent destruction of the environment, our communities, and our planet, suddenly all of these teachers in these states, if these bills were to pass, would not be able to state that because it would be against this indoctrination.
What would that leave environmental science classes to teach?
Environmental science classes? No, that's something that is against... If you teach environmental science, you're indoctrinating my child.
Okay.
I mean, to prevent the destruction of our communities.
You're not allowed to say, don't destroy our communities.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say we should unite to protect our communities.
We're not supposed to unite. We're supposed to think about personal freedom at all times. Stand by ourselves.
Also, destruction of our communities. Apparently, they don't want teachers in any of these states to be able to say, don't draw on the desk or vandalize your textbook, right? Because that's destruction of our community. When you're in school, that's your community. Allowed to teach about not destroying it.
So we'll just ignore that?
The other thing that you wouldn't be allowed to do if this bill passed, you wouldn't be able to have easy access to the arts and frequent exposure to diverse cultures. It's in the Democratic Party platform, so therefore, can't do it. It's off the table.
Just solid Judeo-Christian values. Oh, wait, no, those are banned too.
Yeah, because it's the other party platform. Well, I don't know what there's left to teach.
What are we going to talk about?
Well, you can't teach in history classes that diplomacy and nonviolent conflict resolution must be the primary organizing principles of foreign policy because that's part of the Democratic Party platform. So, can't teach anything really about current...
So, no model UNs then, huh?
Yeah.
So, can
no
we
debate club?
Just watch Saving Private Ryan over and over and over again?
You know what? I subbed for a teacher that tried to do that. he no longer works at our school. Democrats remain at the forefront. This is what the Democratic Party platform says in Washington State, that Democrats remain at the forefront of the struggle to extend civil, political, economic, religious, and all legal and inherent rights to all persons. So from this, I would gather maybe you just couldn't say that Democrats are at the forefront of the struggle. And you know what? As a teacher in public schools, I agree with that. Doesn't matter how my voting record goes. I don't want to say that the Democrats are the best party because the Democrats always want to do this, and they're at the forefront. Because, well, one, I don't actually agree that Democrats remain at the forefront of this struggle. Two, it would be wrong of me.
They're just less worse.
Yes.
it would be wrong of me to say this in terms of like uplifting one political party over another. But it does put into suspicion here the very premise that civil, political, economic, religious, and all legal inherent rights should be granted to all persons, right? The other thing that this kind of thing would ban, a curriculum that is rigorous, comprehensive, and historically and scientifically accurate at all levels, that recognizes the cultural perspectives of children from diverse and indigenous communities. Nope, it's part of the Democratic Party platform. Nope, off the table. Can't do that.
We can't be talking about global warming. I mean,
nothing
how are
that's
we going to
burn
more oil?
Accurate.
You know, this could backfire spectacularly if you know, say a bill like this passes, all of a sudden the Democrats start adding all kinds of crazy stuff to their platforms just to keep it out of schools. You know? Hack the system.
Oh, man. Democrats
I like the one that says democracy relies upon an informed citizenry. That is part of the Democratic Party platform. If these bills were to pass, you would not be permitted to teach in a public school the concept that democracy relies on an informed citizenry.
Well, I mean, that's not really the Republican Party platform anyway. They kind of don't like that idea.
Merely the act of educating someone is apparently indoctrination. That's what this bill says. And, you know, for folks in Arizona and in Virginia and in South Dakota, really be looking out for these kinds of things. Look at the people who are sponsoring these bills, because they're probably sponsoring other bills that are suspect. They're probably sponsoring other bills that want to lessen the impact of science and of medical accuracy and of personal freedom and choice regarding your own medical procedures and rights. Look at the people sponsoring these bills and say, hey, what is the thing that they are rooting for? What is the thing that they are trying to establish? Because from this, it's not an informed citizenry. You're listening to Ask Nate This with Sam Mulvey. We'll be back after the break. Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. You can find us online at atheist.radio. You can also email us at questions@atheist.radio or go to the website atheist.radio and ask us a question right there. We will answer them. Just like last segment, we talked about Chloe's comment about the beautiful woodland creatures. Eva from the internet comments, you're always informative, always entertaining. My go-to newscast for news, politics, and skepticism. Thank you, Eva, for that wonderful little pat on the back. Sometimes it gets hard here, you know, behind a microphone, knowing that there's a lot of people that disagree with you. But we appreciate your comment and being able to bring you that kind of, you know, awesome stuff. Guys, last segment we were talking about some bills being floated in other states. I think we should come a little bit closer to home, though, because it doesn't look like we're at risk of completely dismantling public education in the name of Christian supremacy here. Only slightly, and only for foster kids. So a bill sponsored by four Washington State Republicans aims to allow families to homeschool foster children. Currently, the Washington Administrative Code doesn't allow for foster kids to be homeschooled, but Representatives Jesse Young and Matt Shea are sponsoring HB 1760 that would remove the ban completely, and HB 1761 that would only disallow the practice if a court explicitly said no in an individual case.
Aren't the majority of homeschool education systems religious?
Yes, that's actually been a really difficult thing for secular homeschooling families to be able to deal with, since there's, you know, you need a lot of networking and support if you have decided to homeschool your child. And when you are someone who doesn't believe in God, let alone a Christian, a flavor of Christianity that believes that the earth is 6,000 years old, it's kind of hard to find those networks where you can, you know, talk with other parents, talk with other homeschooling families.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
I have experience here. I've homeschooled my oldest for a little bit with a lot of help, but that was through a public school outreach thing. It was difficult to get everything figured out. It's not easy to find a secular version of homeschooling. There aren't a lot of them.
So we've got these two representatives. There are several others that are sponsoring these bills, but Matt Shea, we've talked about him a lot, right?
Yeah, he's the guy that was investigated by the FBI for calling for the deaths of all non-Christian males, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had his biblical basis of basis of war sermon that, you know, got leaked by I'll note the Republican sheriff of that particular area. So it's not necessarily a political party thing, unless you consider Matt Shea to be on the outskirts of the Republican Party, since he seems to be hanging around a lot in these separatists and nationalist movements.
He's pretty extreme.
And this Jesse Young fellow,
he's from my part of the woods.
Okay.
He's actually my representative. That guy, he's not allowed to have congressional aides anymore because he yells at them too much. He's accused of this, and he wasn't allowed the House of Representatives of Washington State just forbade him from having aides anymore.
Okay.
Congressional aides.
The assistants.
Also, he's been fined on ethics violations twice, but he denies that. I'm not especially a huge fan. Also, another interesting story: his campaign manager was running in the primary on a progressive ticket against the Democratic person running in that particular district. I think it was District 26 B. It's an interesting, weird little thing going on there. I'm not sure what he was up to exactly.
A little vote splitting kind of thing?
Yeah, sort
maybe?
Of a vote splitting thing.
Well, here's what I look at when I see this, wanting to allow homeschooling for foster kids. We've seen in other states, I think namely in Indiana and perhaps even under Pence, you have efforts to really take children that are in vulnerable situations and place them with what lawmakers believe to be upstanding members of society, which in their case happen to be Christian. Many times there are two parents. They are a man and a woman. The mom works from home or works as a full-time mom and household manager. And what it ends up having the potential to do is to rip a child from any sort of contact with the outside world. When you have a fostering system, you're saying, all right, a child was unable to be cared for by whoever their custodial parent was. No matter how unfit or neglectful or harmful that parent must have been, there was some sense of the known for that child. There was some sense of stability in at least I was familiar with the person that was meant to care for me, or I've developed a system to compensate for the neglect I'm experiencing. Now they're being placed into a different circumstance. Even if that circumstance is more protective, is more supportive, and doesn't physically harm the child or mentally harm that child, it's still a transition. And at the same time, to say we're going to rip you from the public schooling system, which is a place where many children get that routine. I mean, I work in a high poverty district with kids in lots of different circumstances. And sometimes, going to school is where they know that they'll get fed. It's where they know they'll see a teacher that they've developed a relationship with, where they can build that with that relationship with trusting adults and of adults that are trustworthy.
And classmates.
Yeah, with peers, right? You don't want to feel alienated, the fact that you've already been disrupted and your whole entire life is upside down. Why would we be supportive of families then isolating that child from everything that would leave them a connection with the outside world?
This almost sounds like an attempt to create sanctioned indoctrination camps.
I think that there's definitely,
households.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fear. Because when you say, I mean, there are strict rules for, say, when children of indigenous communities, either American Indian tribes or Canadian First Nation children, are placed into foster care or placed into care with someone other than their family members. There is such an ugly history of removing those kids from their culture that there's things in place to help prevent that and preserve the indigenous cultures. In our non-indigenous communities in the U.S., I'm not aware of many laws that say, hey, this child came from a family of this religious background. Please make best efforts to continue that. I know in general terms, a foster family is supposed to care for a child in the best way possible to create, not as many disruptions. But we don't have laws that say, if this child came from an atheistic family, continue to not try and make them go to church. If this child came from a Muslim family, please make sure that they have the opportunity to pray five times a day, and don't force feed them pork. You know, don't make them finish their pork chops meal. Those kinds of things. I'm not aware that we have those kinds of laws that would really be protective of children who have limited rights just by matter of their age.
Hmm. I know in a Matthew Shea sponsored household, the Muslim thing wouldn't go over very well.
I mean, I can see that, can't you? Of saying, you know, you're here, we finish everything on our plate. It's disrespectful to not finish your food. And, you know, if a child has religious convictions that say, we don't eat this kind of thing in my family, you're now having to overcome that kind of barrier. Now imagine if that child never had the opportunity to go to school with peers. We also know that for as many foster families as there are that are wonderful and caring, sometimes the act of fostering can be stressful. We all know that just in regular custodial families, there are sometimes issues of abuse and neglect in foster families. And when you cut off a child from the very places where that thing can be reported, I mean, I, serving in a public school environment, I'm a mandatory reporter. If a child says that they're being harmed or they're thinking of harming themselves or others, I have to report that. Now imagine that a child in that situation doesn't have someone that is obligated to report that and stop whatever kind of harm is coming to them or prevent whatever kind of harm might come to them. I think that this is a really bad idea. And I think I can't help but look at the sponsors, look at their party affiliation that is linked with overt religiosity, look at what other kinds of bills like this have passed and why they were motivated in other states, and say, this is an attempt to divorce children from society and place them in a religious context. And I can't see it any other way. And it's these things that look innocuous. It's the things that look innocuous, like, let's stop having teachers indoctrinate children. Good idea. Let's provide lots of options for foster youth. Seems like a great idea. But when you look at who's behind it and what they're trying to accomplish, it's this religious indoctrination, it's prevention of science-based education, and it's building up their Christian armies. I mean,
right. I mean, that's how it gets sort of snuck in.
So
personally, I'm just opposed to this whole idea of, like, I want to say, I know many people who homeschool their children and they do it very well. They see that their kid has, you know, a large social network of their peers and adults. They see that they're getting diverse curriculum and experiences, but these are also not religious people. And I have known people who do religious homeschool, and the differences between what the child experiences are vast, tremendous.
I've seen people that couldn't read above a fourth or fifth grade level because of those religious homeschools.
I think in an atheist community, and especially when you have connections to groups where you socialize together within an atheist or humanist context, you'll get adults who had to experience religious homeschooling or restrictions on what they were able to participate in the public schools. And now someone who is no longer, you know, religiously connected can see the huge gap in experiences and knowledge that they have at the hands of whatever curriculum they were given that told them that the earth is 6,000 years old, that told them that, the devil steals a piece of your soul every time you have premarital sexual relations, the kind of curriculum that says that dinosaurs and humans walked the earth together, the kind of curriculum that says that people of the African continent immigrated for better job opportunities through the Atlantic slave trade. These are the kinds of things that are in a lot of these Christian homeschooling curricula. And, you know, I think that if you've experienced this, I'll invite our listeners, if you have experienced Christian homeschooling or Christian schooling that taught you some of these things, write in, email us with some of your experiences, you know, or leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. You know, what were the kinds of things that you were taught? And, you know, how did you then make up for that?
I can say my brothers both went to a Christian school for a little while when I was in high school. And their history book was interesting. It was history of the United States from a Christian perspective.
Oh, those are fun. Did it say that that Moses was one of our founding fathers?
Yeah, things along those lines.
What? Right?
The Native Americans gave up their land freely because we were going to manage it better, stuff like that.
Yeah, that what's being taught in Puerto Rico now is that the Taino Indians and the Arawak Amerindian people, were brought wonderful things like language and culture and religion. And then they were able to much better feed themselves because of the farming techniques and the fishing techniques that were taught to them by the Spaniards.
That kind of stuff.
And that's the kind of stuff that we try and get rid of, but is rampant within, homeschooling curricula and in private school Christian curricula, yeah. Let alone whether it's in our regular textbooks in public schools, despite, pretty good attempts to try and undo a lot of those racist, overtly racist foundations to American education that we've experienced in the last 60 years or so. Dan, you mentioned something about, sneaking something in there or not really. I want to take us now to actually the U.S. House Committee on Natural Resources, because it has withdrawn efforts to remove "So Help Me God" from the end of oaths taken by individuals providing testimony to their committee. Initial drafts showed that the phrase had been deleted from a rules proposal that included many other changes. Following an objection from Representative Elizabeth Lynn Cheney, the committee held a voice vote to reinstate the utterance. Jared Huffman, an openly agnostic representative from California, noted that the trappings of religion and God in these oaths certainly have not kept an awful lot of people from lying under oath.
Oh, snap.
Sick burn from the only openly agnostic member of Congress.
Right. Yeah, what does the phrase serve to do?
Serves to ameliorate Lynn Cheney's, bunched up panties or something. She's got her panties in a twist because suddenly someone won't be forced to say "So help me God" when they're providing testimony to only this little committee. I gotta say, I like that change. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to say "So help me God." It's purely ceremonial, and it was deemed ceremonial, but now it's not even ceremonial. It's this notion, this acknowledgement that, it's being used as this way to say, look at how Christian we are.
Right. But here they have withdrawn efforts to remove it. So they're no longer going to remove "So help me God" from.
Yeah, basically the folks that were proposing it caved. There was even a Democrat that said, it was so hurtful that we even thought about removing it. Hurtful to whom? Who does it hurt? Who does it hurt if we
God.
Don't? Yeah, I mean, if God's feelings are hurt by someone not swearing to you, I think you need to grow some thicker skin, God.
I would feel very uncomfortable if people started using my name to swear on things.
So help me, Dan. No, I'd feel uncomfortable with that, too.
I'll confess to being a bit arrogant and egocentric, maybe even a little narcissistic, but that still kind of creeps me out to hear somebody say it. I'm like, nope, I don't like it. It's too far. Just tell me I'm pretty.
That particular phrase is required in pretty much any oath that's sworn for the federal government, and I've had to swear to that a couple of times, and I find it kind of annoying.
So in military service or
military service, federal service, swearing an oath to uphold the Constitution.
So help me God.
So help me God.
So what would happen if you're swearing on something other than a Bible and you say, "So help me God"? I mean, are you then, by taking your oath, are you in that very act violating your oath? I mean,
I would assume that some Christians would feel that way. I don't see the "So help me God" as necessary, or the Bible. If I swear an oath, I'm going to do my best to uphold it.
I would love to be able to see "So help me God" removed from anything. Like if praying to God and being seen by what you think is your God is going to be the thing that keeps you from lying and puts you on your best behavior, please do. Continue to do that.
Right.
Okay? I'm kind of a little bit skeptical of your ability to behave yourself if you need God's presence in there coaxing you on to behave yourself. But if that's going to be the thing that gets you to behave well and provide true testimony, sure, keep it in. But for those of us that don't have a higher power coaxing us to try and be better so that we don't end up in hell in our afterlife, or so that we get some cosmic reward, for those of us that don't share that belief, what does it serve to make us say "So help me God" in any kind of oath other than to make a mockery of the very oath we're taking?
Just serves dominionism.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, right? I think, like you, I'm okay with somebody who is religious and wants to add it in of their own accord and just be like, yeah, I've got to take this oath and this whole thing is mandated up until this part. And that's where I'm going to say, so help me God. Or this person might say, and I shall do my best. And this person might, you know, go on one knee like Serpentor and go, this I command, you know, like whatever, you know, whatever makes you feel like.
You do a so say we all, right? You get a little so say we all. Galactica in there.
But if you can't, you know, affirm that oath, does that mean you're not as good a citizen as a good Christian?
I think there's plenty of lawmakers that would assume so, that if you can't affirm, so help me God, that God's not helping you be truthful, then why bother listening to your testimony in the first place? And I think that in and of itself prejudices the lawmakers that you would be testifying in front of. And that, for me, is all the more reason to eliminate it. But there's a little part of me that says as soon as you eliminate it, you're going to have people that will say, I hereby swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God, and make a big thing of it.
Of course.
Because you've seen that, right? Have you been at Have you been at any kind of public hearings where we're about to argue that In God We Trust should not be adopted or mandated or whatnot, and the hearing opens with the Pledge of Allegiance and you hear this big booming echo, under God! Because I've definitely heard it.
Oh, yeah.
In that case, no, God's not helping you not misbehave. You're misbehaving by being thumbing your nose at everyone who isn't like you and doesn't believe in your God. Let's go a little bit abroad to somewhere where churches are actually doing something good.
I love it when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Let's do this.
So a 3-month-long continuous religious service at a church in The Hague has ceased after authorities said the family they were shielding from deportation would be allowed asylum in the Netherlands. Activists supporting an Armenian family that faced political persecution had been taking advantage of a medieval Dutch law that prevents authorities from entering churches when worship services are occurring. Before ending the 96-day nonstop vigil, the Dutch government reached a tentative decision to allow 700 families facing deportation to have their cases reevaluated.
Nice.
Now, you guys had heard about this going on. Like, I don't think that we actually got to talking about it on the show. It's kind of an amazing act that was going on, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's fantastic. It makes me super happy.
Yeah, it's
something nice.
Humanism in the guise of religion. They're just going, you know, this is the right thing to do. And so we're going to use loopholes and hack the rules because, frankly, nobody can find loopholes and hack the rules better than an organized religion. They are professionals at it.
I think you're really right there. To me, it definitely also is the ultimate humanistic act. Just because you are a religious believer doesn't mean that you can't find human solutions to human-made problems. You know, secular humanists just tend to do that without the belief in God or supernatural, right? When you have something that you strongly believe in, that, you know, this is your strongly held beliefs and convictions, which the way it gets bastardized in the United States to prevent people from taking birth control, I mean, we can knock that. But when you have strongly held beliefs about the inherent value of you know, a life that's being threatened in a home country, and you say, what can we do to protect this family? Well, we can use our positions of power within a religious context, but they're not sitting there praying to God, just hoping that this family won't get taken away. There's plenty of religious people that say, I'm going to pray to God, and if God grants my prayers, you will be granted asylum.
Thoughts and prayers.
They didn't settle it, thoughts and prayers.
They had a religious marathon, a sermon marathon that lasted multiple days in order to keep these people in the country. I think that's pretty impressive.
The fact that you get people working together of other denominations to come continue this service, because certainly you can't have one pastor that's giving
this
3-month-long service. It was this amazing act that provided both a way to unify people of perhaps differing faiths in this really ecumenical way. I would have loved to see, and perhaps someone will write in and alert me to this, but I didn't see that there was any participation from secular humanist celebrants or ministers or faith, you know, faith folks, because we do have that. People that are secular humanists have celebrants that are there serving in a pastoral capacity, just without thinking that, you know, God's helping them.
It may be in the language of the law, too, that, you know, a secular humanist celebrant might not count as a religious service.
True.
And I think if I were the pastor whose brainchild this was, I would probably want to err on the side of caution on that one and not invite the secular celebrants, just because it would give a government a crack to start hammering a wedge into, you know?
I think there's definitely an excellent point there. You know, it's really complex when we're looking at these kinds of things, and there's misunderstandings within the United States that churches are sort of sanctuaries, not in just the etymological sense, right? I mean, in my synagogue, we called the place where all the worship happened the sanctuary, right? There were the offices and the classrooms, but there was the sanctuary, and that's where the Torah was, and that's where all the fancy books were and stuff like that. But churches in the United States, houses of worship in the United States, are not true sanctuaries. We don't have laws that prevent authorities from coming in. We have memorandum of understanding. We have certain state level laws. But anytime there's a clear and present danger, anyone can come in. And I think that is a strength in that it's one way that religious communities and beliefs are not privileged above the regular actions of people. It's that if someone's in danger, there's clear and present danger, we're going to come into your church, whether it's a church or not, whether there's a worship service going on or not.
Wasn't there a Catholic church in Seattle in the 70s that did that somehow, though? They, like, hid people in the church?
There are houses of worship all around the United States that have a tradition of providing so-called sanctuary.
Right.
And I think it's an interesting tension within our culture, because you have people that are religious that are at the forefront of pushing for human rights, that are at the forefront for saying our religion motivates us to act in this way to undo discrimination, to promote equality, just as you have people that are non-religious that are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay if your community together under the umbrella of a religious belief decides that you want to clean up a riverbank or adopt a highway or sponsor a refugee family. Good on you. I just think that's something that you're brought to do through your community, not through any magical God power telling you to do so.
Yep. We do the same thing over in Kitsap.
Yeah. I'm just happy to see them using their powers for good.
I think that that definitely powers for good would be an amazing thing that we would love to see in all sorts of things. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. If you've got questions or comments about that, or, you know, if you want to tell us we're wrong about something, give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC or tweet us at Ask an Atheist WA. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Did you guys go to the library when you were little kids and listen to maybe the children's librarian read some stories and stuff like that? You guys ever do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was great.
After school?
I didn't.
No? Okay. What? All right. That's all right. That's all right. I love these things, you know. After school on Tuesdays and Thursdays, if we wanted to hang out at the library, we'd take the little bus pass, we'd go, there'd be some story time, maybe they'd give us some goldfish snacks. I love it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literacy, promotion, and libraries are a place of knowledge, you know? I mean, unlike the those bills we talked about earlier this show about right. wanting to limit indoctrination by basically limiting knowledge.
Right, and indoctrinating.
There's a Houston library that has been in the news, you know, every so often, coming up about this... this idea of drag queen story hour. And I love this because you guys have heard about drag queen story time.
Oh, yeah. We talked about it a little bit.
So, you know, you have incredibly dynamic people that are visually just stunning in their over-the-top kind of makeup and clothing and sparkles. And, you know, visually stimulating a young child can help with imagination. And you have
right.
people that are used to doing acting and stage voices and things like that. Who better to read stories?
Yeah, I mean... Well, most kids are afraid of clowns, so we don't want to have clowns do this stuff anymore. And if you want bright colors and interesting fashion and Am I way offline here?
No, it would be fantastic. I'd love to experience it myself.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of drag queens. That's what I'm getting at, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know children who would run screaming from a drag queen.
Well, there is someone in Houston, Texas, who is not a fan of drag queens and certainly not a fan of them reading to children because...
Wait, they're in Texas?
Yes.
Oh, surprise.
In Houston. So a gun-toting conservative talk radio host was arrested for causing a disturbance at a Houston, Texas library's drag queen story hour event. James Green Sr. yelled that a bunch of homosexuals were molesting our children with the police force's help as he was escorted away from the library that had just last month trespassed him for filming children on the premises. Green, who flashed a laminated media pass and dared arresting officers to turn on their body cams, refused to leave until police could cite specific laws regarding trespass orders, but he was eventually disarmed, handcuffed, and placed under arrest. He posted a partial YouTube video of the incident and entitled it, "Arrested for Being Christian."
Nothing to do with the gun he was carrying or the intimidating manner he was lurking in the entryway for.
Now who's the creepy storyteller?
Yeah.
I guess that was a pretty creepy story. He was already trespassed for using a camera in a library. And libraries can say, you know what, this is not a place where we want you filming people because there's children here. They come here to learn. This is intimidating behavior. It's creepy. Stop. And
right.
When you don't stop, we trespass you.
So here's a guy worried about like some sort of moral degradation or something because drag queens are reading books to kids. And the creepiness here is like his obsession with the kids, of him filming kids against their wishes, of him invading these spaces that are hypothetically safe spaces for kids to hang out in. The person who is making it corrupt, who is making it immoral, is this guy toting his gun in and trespassing, shouting at the cops, daring them to turn on their body cameras and cite a law about trespassing. Trespassing laws are pretty universal. They probably don't have the letter of the law memorized, but I don't think you exactly need to when somebody has walked into a library with a gun to threaten a person reading to kids while filming those kids.
We did a little bit of investigation about James Green. He goes by Doc Green. He is a conservative radio talk show host. I might even give him the dignity of being like our polar opposite. except I don't know how I feel about that so much. So he was a Republican, but now he is a self-proclaimed Tea Party supporter. He is a volunteer with True the Vote. Now, Luke, you looked up True the Vote a little bit.
Yeah, they're kind of a anti voter fraud thing, but really they're an anti anybody that's not white voter thing.
Ah, because all of those voting fraud,
the voter fraud allegations. Yeah,
that's all about, you know, apparently
they are those people.
Someone can go in and then turn around, put on a Groucho Marx mask and a different hat, and come in and vote again, or all of these so-called illegals that he's afraid are voting. You know. No voting fraud, really, and you're a True the Vote volunteer. He's a proponent of the Texas nationalist movement, so he wants to have Texas become its own nation.
Can we do that?
Oh, you'd be keen on that?
I'd be okay with it.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great. Then we can invade that desert for their oil.
He happens to have nebulous military discharge circumstances. He seems to say that he was honorably discharged. Other sources say not so much. So I don't know how he feels about that.
Well, I just don't know who to believe.
But I think we've really got it down here. The creepy one here is not the drag queen who's reading to kids. It's not the parents who are supportively bringing their children to open their minds to literacy or to see different kinds of ways of playing dress up. You can keep playing dress up as a grown up too. I mean, I play dress up every day when I put on my work clothes versus, you know, my pajamas. And there's a purpose for it. Yeah. Doc, maybe you need to see one of your own.
He kind of reminds me of the guy that walked into the DC pizza place and started shooting the place up.
Except that this guy, luckily, was cuffed and arrested before he was able to bring to fruition his fantasy of, you know, protecting children who don't even need protecting.
Right. I think there's an important lesson for the kids in all this, actually. I mean, maybe what he's trying to do has sort of backfired. 'Cause if he's trying to come in and say that, like, you know, what's happening here is immoral, or what's happening here is weird, or what's happening here is going to be harmful. What he's really taught the kids is that drag queens probably aren't going to attack you because you're different, but people like him will. Right. That's the takeaway.
I just hope that this all went down and happened before parents and children started gathering for the event. I hope that none of them had to have their day interrupted by this fool with a YouTube channel that thinks that being arrested because you're waving, you know, guns in your own camera, conflating drag queens with homosexuals and
or child molesters.
Yes, and claiming that they will be hurting children. I just really hope that they were all shielded and guarded from that garbage. So, one more about fashion.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay. Yep. Tens of thousands of Muslims are calling on sports equipment manufacturer Nike to recall a line of sneakers whose sole design resembles the word Allah written in Arabic. A petition created at change.org asks the company to remove Nike Air Max 270s from all store shelves and to review all product designs with greater scrutiny before release. A major concern is that the shoe's sole, and consequently the Arabic word for God, would be trampled, kicked, and become soiled with mud and filth.
Could you say this was a soulful request from the Muslims?
We have so many soul jokes that can be made here. There really are. I know that Sam wants a pair of these for his wall of weird propaganda and weirdness. So, hey, listeners, if you can get your hands on a pair of Nike Air Max 270s and send them to, you know, Ask an Atheist headquarters, I know Sam would love it.
And I asked the Lord why, during the most difficult parts of my life, there was only one set of footprints.
Oh, dear.
And the Lord replied, what are those?
So Allah's not going to be wearing his own names on his feet, right? There's something here that I am someone who was raised in the Jewish faith somewhat observantly, actually kind of really observantly, just in a not traditionally observant way, in a fully egalitarian kind of weird liberal feminist way. I can relate to this. I really can. Because years after leaving observance, years after leaving the idea that God was uniting us or that there was anything supernatural in the world, years after leaving that behind and saying, no, this is not something that I really, you know, understand to be true, I still cringe every time there's a prayer book or a Bible and it ends up on the floor. Like someone knocks it off a shelf, it falls on the floor and they go, oops. Or I'll tell you, there was a Seattle Atheist event I attended probably now about 8 years ago or so. And someone was making the point that whatever's in the Bible, it's not sacred. It's all that's sort of like this magical thinking that you have that. Oh, and as his point, as part of his lecture, he was taking a Bible and repeatedly throwing it on the ground. And even knowing that's not my Bible, right? that's a full, you know, New Testament and whatnot. That's not just the Hebrew Scriptures. Even making the point, I jumped every time it hit the ground or every time a shoe went on top of it. There is something about that. That is, I think, true indoctrination, that even when you know something is not true, so even when you know something is not offensive, it still strikes you as wrong. Do you guys from your childhood have any kinds of things like that? Are you would you walk a mile in the shoes of Nike?
Some of the like equipment that we work with in education and in science is stuff that kind of matters to me in almost a sacred way. Like when I'm teaching students how to use a microscope, I probably give a little bit more instruction than is technically necessary because I don't want them to hurt the microscope, and not because it's like expensive. The ones that we use are sort of a budget model, but it's because it's part of like the almost like the sacred trappings of science.
It's the importance to your work and your life. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you see a kid about to crush the slide cover by moving the Microsoft lens down too much, you're just like, inherently cringe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, for those that don't know, I work as a naturalist, environmental educator in a lot of different fields, but like if we're walking through a forest and a kid picks a plant, you know, they've been instructed not to leave any impact, and they'll just grab a leaf and rip it off because, you know, kids are kids and they do stuff like that. There's sort of this part of me that just kind of twinges, and it's not because they have done real and lasting damage to the forest. it's tiny, you know, it's a leaf, but it's like that little bit of disrespect, of that little bit of trampling what I hold sacred. And so, you know, I don't think that the Bible is a special book or the Quran is a special book, but I could also see the argument for, well, maybe not just trample it publicly. I mean, unless you're deliberately trying to be inflammatory.
It's still a book, and I would not like to have it damaged or burned either. I have a good, healthy respect for books. It's kind of my background, right. And it really bothers me.
If you're going to burn it in the privacy of your own home, not just in front of people to whom they think it's sacred.
So not as an inciting an incitement to say, look, haha, we're you know, trampling on your sacred beliefs.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If you want to debate somebody's beliefs, debate their beliefs. If the book means nothing to you and it's your copy of that book, then fine, do whatever you want with it. It's not the only copy of that information out there. But, you know, don't make a scene out of it to deliberately impact others.
Okay, so Nike shoes. Are you in favor of Nike recalling the shoes? Yay or nay? Dan?
I kind of want to see them first and see, like, all right, how close is it? Is it a real stretch and it's like somebody just looking for press? Or is it really that close to the name of Allah written in Arabic that it's actually extremely offensive? Or is it like Jesus in the toast kind of thing?
It's more like that. It's like a little rounded W. Kind of vaguely resembles, from what I gather, the Islamic script. So I'm not really worried about it at all.
Okay.
Is it like a function of the tread? It's just a label.
It's just like a trademark thing.
Okay, so here's another thing. There was another shoe that had like clovers on the tread, clover shapes. And it turned out that when you walked in sort of wet puddles and then stepped on pavement, you ended up not so much with a clover, but with the outline of it in a certain way such that it looked like a swastika.
Right.
In favor of the recall, yay or nay?
I'm all for that.
But mixed feelings, I guess. Yeah. It's like, if it's only under this situation and only when you go from, you know, a wet puddle to dry pavement and it doesn't actually look like a swastika and it wasn't designed to be a swastika.
Intent here is important.
Intent is important.
Yeah, I think that,
yeah,
that
that's
really
what I'm getting
at. I mean, they don't intend for them to be swastikas, but I'm sure people that want wet swastikas everywhere would love wearing those. But
soon as that happened with that particular shoe, I am out, and I would say nope, passing these on to Goodwill.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Again, find us online at atheist.radio. Give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. Tweet us at Ask an Atheist WA. Find us on Facebook at the same place. Email us questions at atheist.radio. Thank you, Dan, for joining us.
It was fun.
And thank you, Luke.
Good to see you again.
We'll see you guys next week.